Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to Countermeasures, live from the Lord's Last Citadel in the bunker here in Peoria, Arizona. I'm Bruce Nixon, and my partner in crime for this radio program, Countermeasures, is...
Greg Rath.
You know, Greg, it is a beautiful Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday. And, you know, is that expression overused? I don't think it is.
No, it cannot be overused.
Right, especially for someone...
Because it's never thank God it's Thursday.
Unless it's thank God it's Thirsty Thursday.
Thirsty Thursday.
Then there's that.
I like thank God it's Monday when it's a holiday.
Like this past Memorial Day.
Amen.
Now,
beautiful.
We did miss everybody. We hope that you remembered that this Memorial Day was in honor of the war dead and not
the service.
Everybody, right? I'm a veteran, okay? And I have probably 100 inbox messages from people. This Memorial Day weekend, we just want to thank you for your service. And God love him.
Yep.
Right? God love him. But can I smack him?
No, because you know what? At least they thank you. I know they, and I did, I've done the same thing. I had a buddy of mine that's a Marine, as we know, Mike, Marine. And when I said happy Memorial Day to him, he goes, no, that's Veterans Day. That's not Memorial Day. Memorial Day is for the guys that lost their lives.
But at least you didn't say thank you for your service. You just said happy Memorial Day.
Right.
Which is kind of an odd miss thing, right? Happy Memorial Day where we remember the war dead. Did I ever tell you the story? And maybe I have, and stop me if I haven't, but the listeners don't know that my 5-time removed great-grandfather was an Irishman.
He wasn't Irish.
He was an Irishman.
Did he like whiskey? Did he like a pure?
I never asked him, but here's what happened. He came, he moved his entire family, himself, his wife, a few boys at the time, to Kitterick, Maine.
Kitterick.
Right?
Right.
In the year 1744. He was, at the time, asked to join the British Army because the British colonies were the British colonies, right?
Right, right.
So he rose to the rank of major in the British Army. And, well, we know the rest of the story is the colony started to organize in about 1765. And by 1775, he was obviously 20-something years older. And he switched sides. He joined the Continental Army. And to his great fame, because of Memorial Day, he and 100 of his fellow Continental Army men fought at the Second Battle of Lexington and are buried in Saratoga, New York, in a mass grave of war veterans.
So he actually died in the war.
He died in the Second Battle of Lexington, which happened right after Concord. Right after the British came for our guns, they started firing at Concord.
Right after that, we whooped their ass.
Well, you know, there's a couple of nuances to that. We won't get into that, but it was my Memorial Day story.
Right.
My 5-time removed great-grandfather.
I just like the best part that we whipped their ass. That's my favorite part.
And it was really the weather, actually.
It was God's will.
Well, we won't argue with God's will. But if not for the weather and Yorktown and all kinds of little scurvy things and nasty nuances of history, we may be speaking British and having a cup of tea right now instead of talking on the radio.
Amen.
You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
You feel me?
I dig it. I feel you.
What would they call Phoenix if it were British?
Crumpets? I don't know. What? Something.
All right. Well, listen, again, you're tuned to Countermeasures. Happy Friday. Hope you had a blessed Memorial Day. Tonight's program is brought to you by OLT Fabrication. It's located at 2301 West Broadway here in Phoenix. If you'd like to talk to them about anything steel, big steel, little steel, everything in between, I mean, they've built gigantic buildings, little buildings. They can build something for you, or you can buy steel from them. Check out OLT Fabrication by giving them a call at 602-276-4841. We have one other sponsor today.
Lifeboat Coffee.
I believe we do. Lifeboat Coffee.
Yep. It's on the web at lifeboatcoffee.com. You can visit at 7th Street and Dunlap. And
I've heard a rumor they roast coffee there.
Just a tad. If you get there between 5 and 6...
you can annoy the owner.
You can annoy the owner. And your clothes will smell like wonderful...
We call it coffee. Eau de Café.
Eau de Café.
All right.
Maybe that's what we'd call it if we were, you know... The British one.
Ode to cafe. You'd have to go ode.
Ode.
Right, because they don't really like the French, but they do homage, right? Ode to cafe.
All right.
I'm not trying to be French.
Please don't.
All right. All right. So last week, Greg, we did a lot of investigative analysis of the state of Arizona budget.
Right.
All right. There's a lot of insights there, right? But we have at the fore here kind of a, we want to set up today's program. If you're following along, obviously the baseline for this program over the last several weeks has been trying to ourselves learn more about how the state works and share that information with you, dear listeners, and more importantly, build a body of interest so that in the near future, we can meet in person and create these new electronic and in-person committees of correspondence where we can build a consensus and help change things here at home.
One thing I'll tell you is I've been doing the research on this. To sift through, I mean, the budget, just the budget, the federal money and all the grants and everything that total somewhere between 14 and 18 billion, depending on where you read, is like 1,000 pages long. And trying to decipher that and see where all this money comes from and how it goes, because you got the general fund and then you got these federal funds and how it's used, what an absolute royal pain in the rear end trying to figure that out. I got through some of it, and but I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling how large. I mean, 40 some odd billion dollars total revenue. And I read somewhere else on the internet, and I want to go back and look at it again, that there's $80 billion coming to the state of Arizona. Maybe that's other federal money regarding, you know, forestry or something like that. But with regards to the operation of the state of Arizona, it's $40 billion. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, and I guess we get to that point where we said it last week, we'll reiterate it this week, that it seems to me a matter of keystrokes, right? Because you really don't have enough people in the world to do all this money exchange. What I really like to do is find an expert on federal accounting, somebody from the GSA or the what is the other office, the GOA, where you can say, hey, look, we actually collect this much money in taxes, but we spend this much money. Most of the time, we just call that deficit spending, but it's happened for 100 years. So what do you call it? Right? Isn't that a great question?
Great question.
Like, what do you call that? Like, we just spend more money or keystroke money. I can't even envision $100 billion
coming. Oh, I could.
Well, I'm saying,
maybe get an Epstein jet or something.
For the, right. But I mean, not for us personally, but for the state of Arizona.
Right.
We have this org chart here, right? And I think it's funny. At the top, they have us, the electorate. Like, we're in charge, right? Did you see that on the top of that? The electorate. We're in charge of the government.
Right.
And then, of course, we're like a constitutional state, like the whole United States. We have the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. But did you see how they kind of all meld together underneath the governor's office? Like, you see some overlay for legislative branch that's very small.
My favorite box all the way down. I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm glad you did.
Other boards, commissions, and agencies. What the hell is that? And how much money? I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, let's find that out. But
we will.
I want to be on that.
Yeah.
I'll be on the other board.
Right.
And let's get paid to
do it. I'm going to be on the diving board. That's crazy. That's crazy. This.
Well, you do have a pool here.
Right. Kaboom.
But honestly, look at underneath the governor's office. The executive branch, making up, I'm going to call it 90% of this org chart.
Oh, yeah.
Would you concur?
Yep, absolutely.
So how is that reasonable and prudent? I don't even understand how, like, okay, the legislative branch, the people that are representing us, the people of Arizona, have 5 boxes on the org chart. The judicial branch has 5 boxes on the org chart. Now, let's count them up. The governor's office under the executive branch has 5, 9, 13, 18, 23.
There's a ton of stuff.
23. What's the ratio to 23 to 5? Pretty bad.
4 to 1? 5 to 1?
Easy. But what my point is, we the people ought to be represented by the legislative branch. Would you agree or disagree?
Degree. Or agree. Degree. I disagree.
But honestly, right?
Yeah.
All right. So why do we only have 5 boxes?
I don't know. I have no idea. That's why we're here.
No, exactly.
Right.
And I guess the point we're trying to make, good listeners, is that, hey, we don't have all the answers. We're exploring this with you. And I think that's the genesis of what we're trying to say. There's a lot to unpack here. The money is ridiculous. If we dial it backwards for just a minute and go, hey, how did we get here? Let's have just a quick conversation from your mind's eye about this is 2021.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You've grown up here. I'm a newcomer. I've been here since 2015.
Right.
But what have you observed? Like from the point of view, not just as a cop on the street,
right,
but as a family man, you know, husband, father, resident property owner, what has been the radical shift in your mind for the growth of Arizona? And I don't mean like people came from other places. I mean, what have you seen politically as the big shift?
Well, I can tell you when I was in sixth grade that I walked to school with a rifle on my shoulder and taught the kids how to clean a rifle and handle it safely, and not a single person called 911.
For example, yeah.
Yeah, for example.
What would happen now? You're a lieutenant in those Phoenix PD. What would happen?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that would be a, you know.
But is it actually against the law?
Guns on campus, absolutely, yeah.
So, that, I mean, just for the record, I don't know if anybody really knows that, but you cannot bring a weapon onto a public school campus in the state of Arizona. That's per fact?
Fact.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, noted, right? I mean,
yeah, and I, you unless know, there may be a nuance of a gun that's legally locked and stowed inside your vehicle and not carried upon yourself. I think you're going to be fine with that. But yeah, walking around with one on your hip inside a school is going to cause you some internal discomfort.
Well, for instance, I'm a ship's captain. Captain of Lipo Coffee, right?
Right.
I oftentimes carry every day.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be welcome as is on a public school campus. Is that for grade school, high school, college, everything?
I'd say it's pretty much all of them.
What about the governor's like complex, the Capitol?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I think they're fine. I think if they were out in the courtyard and stuff, in fact, I've been down to protest before and guys were carrying rifles and stuff like that. So I think they're fine. Getting inside the building is going to be a different story.
Yeah, for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've just gotten to that point. So one, I don't know what you're trying to explain here, but the radical shift, but overall, right?
I mean, well, I think
let me sure. interject this. There were what? 2.5-3 million people here in the state of Arizona in the late 90s?
Yep, 2 million. That's what it was saying.
Yeah. So now we fast forward.
Seven and a half million, I believe, is where we're at.
That's explosive growth.
Huge.
Right? And how do you really keep up with that? Now, one of the things that's interesting to me is between the difference between property owners, whether that be farm property, horse property, or real estate, like a home
right.
or commercial apartment buildings. What the ratio is on that, right? Because it seems to me this is the source of revenue that we're talking about, right?
Right.
If the state is raising revenue from property taxes
right.
through the county and sales taxes through consumption, right? Because the sales tax is a consumption tax, right?
Right.
You're going to go out and buy a $100,000 boat, you're going to pay $8,600 in taxes.
Right.
Right. I go buy a $100 TV,
mm-hmm.
I pay $8.60 in tax.
Right.
Why can't we have a flat tax in Arizona?
Well, you know, they're talking about that. I read about it. They're getting closer to that right now. They're working that way.
Across the board. No income tax?
I don't know whether it was an income tax, but I think it's some sort of flat tax, and they're working on that. I think that – I don't know whether it's income or – I think it is. I think it's an
income. Or consumption.
I don't know.
I mean, truly a flat tax works on consumption.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. But if you have to eliminate the other pain point, right? I'd be interested to know feedback from the listeners. Like, would you be in favor of eliminating the income tax from your wages or property tax from your property in favor of a consumption tax?
So basically a sales tax, if you will?
Yeah, a flat rate
well,
tax.
Well, sure. You know what? I think that would be, sounds to me like that'd be a little more volatile, obviously, if all of a sudden Joe Biden decides to close the country down, that's going to scare everybody to death. They're not going to buy anything, right? So guess what? Your taxes go down or your tax revenues go down. If we're in a good mood, if, you know, the markets are doing well and we're excited about the economy and stuff. Obviously, we're going to spend more. But the flip side is, what about a guy like me that's relatively frugal? I don't overspend. That's a good way to save money. You know what I'm saying? That's a good way to save money and invest it for your future.
I think that's what Steve Forbes' point was when he ran for president in the 90s, right? Proposing that flat tax. It gave him a lot of steam in the 90s. And he said it this way. The state should probably raise about 17% flat tax.
Right.
Let's adjust that for the 90s to 20 years later. Let's say it's 19%. So for every $100 you spend, you pay the state of Arizona bracketed 19 bucks, and they did divvy it up to the county and the city as needed, right?
Right.
The federal government can also overlay over the top of that. And in his model, it was 17% to the state and about 8% back to the feds. So, of course, the motley crew of the ne'er-do-wells who love the poor and hate the rich said that that would be unfair. But if this is the basic question. Right. Is it unfair to have a tax based on consumption?
No. I think it's fair to pay a certain percentage of your income tax. So if you make $100,000 and you pay 10% in income taxes, you pay $10,000, right?
Well, right. I'm saying eliminate income tax. Go to flat tax.
No, sales. Flat tax. Well, depends on what you're paying taxes on. I mean, are we paying taxes
everything
on
that you consume?
Everything you can consume? You know, I'd have to sit down and look at a budget for somebody that is...
Well, I'm saying cars, trucks, you know, phones, TVs, you name it. If you buy it retail, you pay the flat tax.
I think
tax.
It's fair. I mean, a flat tax for everybody is That's fair as far saying. As I'm yeah. concerned.
And all I'm getting at is all these different things... Right, that we have within the budget context
mm-hmm.
make absolutely no sense in the sense that from the idea that we have no idea where it comes from.
Right.
Would you agree?
I agree.
All right, what are you working on?
Well, I was looking up that flat tax. Let's see, spelling out the blah, blah, blah.
You've done a great amount of research in the last week here. Share with us some of the highlights of the things that you've gleaned from that research.
Well, we were stuck on, you had two sources of income. You had income that's in the general fund, which is generated by taxes and fees and all the other magic tricks that we do. And then you have about 14 billion.
Right.
And then we get about 18, 19, 20 billion. I was saying 26. I'm looking at more information. It's more like 18, 15. I'm not 100% sure which facts are right, but let's say 15 for the sake of trying to figure out. So you got the organizational chart, and I don't know how these monies blend, but I got a copy of, and you can look it up online, and it's basically Governor Ducey's Statement of Federal Funds, fiscal years 2018 to 2020.
And you found that at the state website?
I just Googled it, and it came up. It's blah, 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 contact Governor Office of Strategic Planning. So,
all right. So we're giving you the bona fides for the documents here. We're not just asking Siri to answer the question.
Right.
We've got the documents. Right. We're looking at them. I'm kind of looking at them saying, okay, thank God Greg can read because it's really confusing.
You know, and so I got the organizational chart is what I got. That's the first thing I did. I wanted to see what agency organizations and each one of these boxes, like you look up, Department of Health Services and
Health and Human Services.
You know, there's got to be other agencies inside there. But this is federal money spent. $225 million goes to them, but they get more money from the general fund as well.
It's healthcare.
Healthcare. Free healthcare. Would we call that free healthcare?
Yeah, for the underprivileged.
For the underprivileged. They Access got a gigantic amount from the general fund. I don't remember off the top of my head, but in excess of that, they get another $10.6 million from the feds out of that. But then if you read down and you look at, what do they call it? They call it stimulus grants for rural areas, or they call it stimulus grants. The technology expenditure to access from the feds was $48 million. I mean, it's. I
so
mean,
this got to be for computers.
Oh,
and
well, yeah,
internet access. I guess, you name it, right?
But you've got.
But it still begs the question: where on God's green earth does the federal government collect their money?
Well, from us, supposedly, or they print it when they're running out.
Well, I guess that's what I mean is. Who can answer the question of how much money is actually physically collected, right? Everybody that's got kids in this God-given world that doesn't make an enormous amount of money, let's say you're under that 150K threshold, you're not paying taxes. And, all right, I'll put you on the spot for just a minute. You have to pay taxes?
I do.
You don't get any money back, you just pay your taxes.
Well, I've arranged it. With regards, you know, withholdings and stuff that I usually owe, you know, a couple $1,000
in income tax.
In income tax,
at the end of the year.
At the end of the year.
Right, but between you and your wife, people would call you part of the 1%.
I would say so, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So if you are contributing as part of the 1% a few pittance, $1,000 at the end of the year, the people on the other side politically and culturally and intellectually will say they're going to cry foul.
Well, they can cry foul out they want. I look at my check stub every 2 weeks, and I pay enough taxes I could buy another house just like the one I'm sitting in.
But you get it back.
No, I don't get that money back. That's what I'm paying.
Right, but it's not. I'm saying at the end of the year you're only paying a couple thousand. You're paying a couple thousand a paycheck.
Yeah, at the end of the year I owe money to the federal income or to federal,
on top of what
on
you
top
pay.
Of what I pay.
Gotcha. So you guys are bracketed up.
And I got three kids that I'm...
You're, right, but you don't get the earned income credit anymore because they're old.
Yeah, the 26 to 21-year-old, no.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a... I guess what we're saying is this is what we had this little loose end discussion upstairs was on the other side of the philosophical cultural equation, the godless radical left, they'll accuse you 1%ers of not paying taxes when in fact... You guys make up 90% of all the actual money coming in.
Right.
You could spend several hundred thousand dollars over, you know, a decade in taxes.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Just thinking about it off the top of my head, I mean, probably $25,000 in income taxes, $22,000
in income taxes. Right
off the top. Just the feds. That's just the feds.
Right off the top.
Right off the top.
And then
maybe probably an extra couple of grand at the end of the year. That's a lot of money.
I'm saying, right?
Not to mention, I pay for all my kids' school. I mean, they got some scholarships and stuff like that, but I pay for that. There's nobody running around handing federal dollars out to that, and I'm sure that's what my tax dollars go to and that sort of thing. So not only do I pay the taxes, but I don't get any benefits of all the free stuff that gets kicked back out. That's so you're kind of getting double hosed there because not, you know,
because most people say I pay taxes, I get fire, police, streetlights, paved roads and public schools.
Well, and if
right?
I
and that kind of a,
well, and I will tell you also, if we did it proportionately, you know, I would probably have triple the amount of cops that in my neighborhood than in some other neighborhood. So, yeah, no. So, I, you know, the haves, as they call it, subsidize the have nots. There's no doubt about it. And you know what? Part of me agrees with that. I agree with that because, you know, that seems fair. But it's the nickel and diming every single time you turn around, whether it's a gas tax, whether it's a surcharge for, you know, cell phones or whatever.
Yeah, have you looked at your wireless bill lately?
Doesn't it
make you want to vomit? Yeah. It's worse than the phone company was when we had landlines.
Yeah.
But you've brought up, I think, a central point worth discussing. It seems fair. Right. And I think you hear that time and time again. We've heard it from the other side as well. People like as prominently as Bernie Sanders and Nancy Pelosi have said the rich have to pay their fair share. And I think that's the question that I have for you, Greg, is who is the arbiter of fair?
Well,
and I'm setting you up here because there's a deep discussion.
Depends on how the winds blow.
Right. But depends. I mean, for you as... You, like, because this ultimately is the issue, right? And by the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Countermeasures on Anchor FM. This is Bruce Nixon and Greg Rath. We're really having a great talk on a follow-up from last week's budget discussion. But I think we just got to the nut, Greg. Right?
Right.
Who decides what's fair?
Now, well, we should. We should.
Right. But I mean, I think in the one sense you think democratically.
Right.
In the other sense, we think about the House of Representatives and the Senate back
right.
east.
Right.
A small group of people deciding on their own what they think is fair and good and true and right. The same could be said for this top-heavy, enormous state organizational chart. We said at the top of the program, it's the executive branch with 25 departments. The legislative branch that's supposed to represent us has 5 departments. And the judicial branch, to keep both other branches in check, also has 5 departments. Something is out of whack. But fairness, I think, if you really want to get to it, if you don't want to live inside of a dictatorship of relativism, meaning what you say can't be true because what's true to me is true to me and what's true to you is true to you. Excuse me. If you don't want to live inside that dictatorship of relativism, true fairness, authentic fairness, what we're talking about is Christianity.
Amen.
Would you agree?
Amen.
Right? Because ultimately, were you asked by Jesus when he gave the Sermon on the Mount to perform the Beatitudes in the form of taxes? Right? I mean, did he say render under Caesar what is Caesar's and pay more taxes to feed the poor?
Nope.
Or did he ask you to do it?
Well, he asked me to do it.
Right. I mean, I guess that's what I'm getting at, right?
No, I mean, and it should be up to us.
In this grand sense of fairness, though, this is where the government, and I know we've gone over this, but it's worth reiterating, the government has replaced
the church.
Not just the church, but nanny, husband, lover, bitch.
Right.
Right. All the above. Right. If you need something and you're a single mom, you go to Papa Government because you don't need a dad anymore.
Right.
You don't need a husband anymore. Isn't that radically odd? But in the sense of fairness, this specific question.
Right.
Why do I trust you to arbitrate fairness?
You shouldn't.
Well, we do.
Well, I know.
In the sense of you're part of the government and this government is part of this bigger government who just decides on their own willy-nilly what's fair and what's not.
Yes, that is a fact.
Well, we all have a different idea of fairness if we don't have a baseline of Christianity. That's all I'm saying.
Right. There's got to be a baseline. And we go back and
don't have one.
No. No, it's
I don't want to get on too controversial subject, but June is Gay Pride Month. Okay?
Right.
The state of Arizona, the county and the city are spending an inordinate amount of money to promote homosexuality. Now, if you hold that in the context of reality, A, just fiscally, is it prudent? Like, should we have, for instance, we're married men. Should we have a married men celebration month where we get money spent on us to celebrate that we're married men? Doesn't that sound ludicrous to you?
Sounds ludicrous.
So would the converse be true about any identity group being lavishly spent money on to fly flags and run television commercials and radio ads and special websites and coupons? And I mean, to me, it's just, what I'm getting at is things are so far out of control. The state will justify spending money on things like that because it's fair.
Well, and I think you boil it down to it's purchasing votes too.
But we hate to be sullied like that, don't we? Don't you hate to think that way? Like, in other words, what I'm getting at is, let's say, in 5 years, we were to put you up as a candidate.
Right.
You'd have to trade off everything that you know is good and true and right to take money to get elected, because I think that's the system that we're in.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, you're going to have to, you know, if you dug down and looked at your media and who really controls them and that sort of thing. Even if you have a ton of money, if you've got the machine against you, you may not even have a chance then.
Well, I think we saw that in the last cycle, right? We don't have to go into the details, but
right.
But it gets down to who is the arbiter of fair.
Right.
Right. In this case, we've elected people who act autonomously to us.
Right.
Right. I think we talked privately once about the franking privilege for the House of Representatives and the Senate of the United States.
Right.
To keep the constituency informed.
Right.
The electorate. Well, we're the number one block on this
organizational
org chart you downloaded, but have you ever gotten anything from a state rep telling you what's going on?
Only when it's election time.
Right. But isn't that, don't you find that just despicable?
Well, you know, why not? Why isn't the media that, you know, own the television stations and the radio and all that kind of stuff, why don't they sit down and talk to each one of these state legislature people and give them some time to talk about those things equally? You know, that to me would seem fair if we're talking about
fair. Well, it
used
to be the rule.
Right.
Equal time used to be the rule of the FCC. If you owned a public trust, every air frequency, whether it be TV or radio, even the cell phone frequencies are held in the public trust. They're supposed to, up until, I want to say, 2005 or 6, give equal time to all issues on radio and television broadcasts. But then the owner's like, well, we own this. We have all this advertising money and clout. You can't tell us what to do.
Right.
Even though every frequency is owned by the people of the United States.
Well, the frequencies are.
Yeah, that's right.
But
their right to broadcast is held in the public trust.
Right.
Right. So we should deny them.
Yeah, how do you do that, though?
I don't know. Burn them to the ground.
Right. No.
Yeah. I don't know.
No, I don't. You know, it's, you know, I'm sitting here looking at all this and we're talking, you know, normally I'm not so speechless, but the hard thing to perceive is how huge the machine is. Where do you take a bite out of this? Where do you take the bite? I mean, we, you know, and the funny thing is we talked about how we're very concerned at this program, countermeasures. We're concerned about state level, local, trying to do grassroots here. But it still bounces back to
it's
the federal.
All tied together. And I think we're discovering that together.
Oh, it's
interwoven to the degree where sometimes you can't see the lines are blurred that far.
Well, go take a look at your budget. You know, you've
is there a state of Arizona anymore? Is it just a little district of the federal government? I guess we could describe it that way.
Yeah. I don't see states' rights. I don't see, you know, again, we back to the, you know, 535 odd people that control,
right,
you know, all the four. I think the budget last year was $4.4 trillion.
For the feds.
For the feds.
Right. And this year, Joe Biden just last week proposed another $6.1 trillion.
Right.
$6.1 trillion.
Right.
For the fiscal year ending in 22, he wants to spend five of those.
Right.
All right, but when you look, that maybe it's a good segue. I don't know if you have it with you. I didn't bring my phone over.
Yeah, I got my phone.
If you want to maybe play back while I talk about it, this idea of the difference, and this is, I think this is an important distinction, the difference between a million and a billion and a trillion. Did you find it?
Yeah, I've got it. It's on. I got it on Instagram right here.
All right, maybe we just play it right over the radio.
You want me playing it?
Yeah. I want you guys to listen to this audio. We're going to put it right up to the mic, and we're going to let it play.
People don't appreciate the difference between a million and a billion. Okay, I did the calculations myself. A million seconds accounts for about a week and a half. Okay? A billion seconds is 32 years long. That's crazy. Okay, let's put this into further context, okay? If you want to be a millionaire, I can give you $5,000 a day for 6 months, and you'd be a millionaire. If I give you $5,000 a day for 547 years.
Well, what happened?
You'd be a billionaire. I don't know, it timed out. But yep. You heard it from the horse's mouth. Now, it doesn't take a genius to take out your calculator on your phone to do the math. It pars out within dollars.
Right.
Right? But then magnify that another 100 times fold, 100,000 times folded. So the math of 537 years becomes a millennia.
Yeah.
And then you're a trillionaire, right?
At $5,000 a day.
At $5,000 a day. And this is what the federal government is proposing, spending sixfold. A millennia and a half of $5,000 a day. And I don't know. It's numbing to think about. And some people are like, well, why are you worried about this? You know, I think that's a legitimate question. This is why it matters. Because the federal government can make up anything they want. And You have a keyboard there. Clicky clack on the keyboard. This is all that happens.
Right.
Right? Clicky, clicky, clicky clack. It's magic, magic, magic. And it's only important because you get to a point where you remember stimulus that came out. There's one round, two round, three round stimulus.
Right.
Well, what happens when they get their way and everybody just gets $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month? And nobody has to work because they're just sitting at home.
Right. I mean,
kind of like what's just happened.
Like what's just happened. I just did the numbers. 6.6 trillion divided up by 365 days. That's $16,438,000 a day spent. $16 million a day. Oh my God. That's insane. That is insane. I don't get it. I don't know where, you know. And to say that we're still broke and to say that we're still having deficits and, you know, you've got homeless issues and you've got hunger issues and all the other stuff is just mind-boggling. I don't know how you do it. I mean,
but money doesn't solve those problems.
No, back to the family.
People solve those problems.
Well, your family.
Maybe we'll interject this thought into next week's program just as a teaser when we move on to our next little episode, but... Do you realize that the federal government gives away about $300 billion annually in foreign aid? Maybe more?
Probably more. Probably more.
Now, if we don't have any money...
Why are we giving it away?
I'm just saying, look, Greg, you want to borrow $300 from me?
Sure.
I don't have any money, but I'll give you $300.
Awesome.
Right? That's the same thing, right? Well,
why don't you just print it off? Wait a minute. That's illegal for you.
Right. $27 trillion currently floating in currency at this present moment in time. $27 trillion in cash. And 1% of the people hold 30% of the cash. But let's forget about cash for a minute and inflation. I'm no economist, but I play one on the radio. I'm just asking the very crude question of you, sir. If the federal government has no money, how does it give money away? Now, I'm not talking about loans for countries that, oh, we want to borrow this amount of money because maybe it's good money. Maybe they'll pay it back. I'm talking about pure giveaways. We, the people, authorized our Congress to give, I don't know, let's pull up a country, Ethiopia, $40 billion in liquid cash foreign aid.
That's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do.
Right, but I'm just saying, does it work?
I don't know. I would love to, somebody's on the computer, types an extra zero, hoping that somebody's going to buy that debt around the world and, you know, share that with us. But, I guess there may be an elitist mentality that, like, well, who's going to repo the United States? Because that's essentially what happens when you don't pay your bills.
Right. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, Russia jettisoned the dollar as a reserve currency for their oil, which is a signal of war, by the way. The yuan, I've been studying this for about 6 years. China is posturing. They want the yuan, the Y-U-A-N currency.
Right.
To be the reserve currency for oil. The world is currently using the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency for oil, kind of the backbone of the global economy. Let's put it that way. Russia yesterday said, nope, we switched the yuan. That's the biggest saber rattling to war that we've seen since, let's say, Hitler invaded Poland. It's that big. Because Hitler met very little resistance. And Putin, now the Pentagon is admitting that Putin is the one behind the oil pipeline attacks, hacking, the meat hacking. It's all breaking news, right? But think about the dollar being jettisoned as the world global reserve for oil. The United States will have no choice but to go to war. Well, because trading oil is all done around the world in dollars.
Right.
When you sink that ship, America goes dead broke. There's not a penny left for anybody.
So what, do we got to go to war and force them to use the dollar again? Or
essentially, you have to go to war and say, either you get back on the train or we're going to blow you up.
Which is absurd, obviously, you know, to think
about
it.
The economy won't survive the collapse of the dollar as the world reserve economy dollar. It won't survive. And it's it's been actually on the horizon for a long time. China just said in the news the other day, hey, you know, we've got ships coming your way. They're steaming toward Hawaii. We've got Russia saying, well, you know, we did basically, they admitted to doing all these crazy things on the hacks. Did you even read about the fifth of the world's meat supply was held ransom by a cyber attack?
Yeah, I heard that.
That's kind of crazy. But now just them saying, hey, I'm circling back to the economy is based on oil.
Right.
The U.S. dollar is held as a reserve currency. The world trades oil in the dollar. If that collapses, arbitrage is the idea that you can trade currencies in time zones to make money as the world shifts, as the sun spins, right?
Right.
So without the ability to turn dollars into money by trading oil, Wall Street would essentially fall apart. Companies that relied on that kind of trade efforts, whether it be stocks, bonds, commodities, or whatever, wouldn't have that baseline, right?
Right.
Think of it that way.
I see what you're saying.
I only bring it up because we've got this government at large in the federal sense and the state sense that work in a kind of a mirage, right?
Right.
There really isn't any making sense of it, right?
No, it's just barely scratching the surface.
Right, but and what does it mean to the average person? What does it mean to you? Like, doesn't this frustrate you?
Well, it's overwhelming to a guy that cares about it and reads about it. What about the guy that just stands on the corner? What about the guy that's, you know, we can, well, baffle him with food stamps, right?
Right. I mean, it's the saddest thing ever when you drive around here in Arizona. If you're tuned in, of course, this is Countermeasures on Anchor FM. Nixon and Rath, we're wrapping up here in the next several minutes. But we want to say thanks to our sponsors, OLT Fabrication, on the... What's that address?
2301 West Broadway.
602-276-something-something-something-something. Sorry.
4841.
4841. And LiPo Coffee on the web at lipocoffee.com. I guess, really, when we started out the idea of this program, it really comes full circle to what you just said, the guy standing on the corner. How do we affect that change, right? There isn't, from my vantage point, I believe your vantage point, we're not talking about some new government program to solve that problem.
Can't. There's already 150 of them here in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know what? And it was funny. You and I were joking about this the other day. You know, in 2001, 9/11, what did we get? Was it $1 trillion blow to the economy, right? $1 trillion, 25, 2,700 people dead, plus a war that, you know, were sort of in, sort of out. And how many billions of dollars spent on that. Whether you agree with it or not agree with it, the fact still remains is that is such a huge thing. One would think that enema would have cured us and rallied us about ourselves, our country. I saw it for a little while, but God, we're so short-sighted. Do we need 40% of the population in food lines? If what you're talking about is true with regards to the oil and the collapse of the dollar, you know, you're going to have half the population sitting in a food line.
It's very, very, very possible. I mean, it's on the horizon. Absolutely is. And so what does that mean? Like, what do real people do? Like, for today, the guy standing in the corner, we all pass him by, flip him off, you know, think bad thoughts about him. But why not hand him a bottle of water and a banana or something, you know? I'm not saying that everybody has to carry a trunk load of water and banana.
Well, I think you're...
But there's something human about that connection.
Well, and I think you're hitting the point right on the head. You know, it should be us taking care of them, not the government. It should be us. The problem is, again, we don't want them to... I mean, if you walk up and you know, you help somebody or whatever, you know, maybe you feel guilty, maybe he feel, we want to be guiltless. I mean, we were talking about that relativism again, you know, and you know what, if we just let the government take care of it, well, we don't have to think about it.
Right. I pay my taxes. They take care of it.
Right.
It's sort of like saying I gave it the office.
It's exactly like saying I gave it the office.
Right. I bet it's problematic for all of us, right?
That sure.
We have this mentality that the government is going to take care of everything.
Right.
I mean, if I gave a really quick synopsis of what I think is wrong with America, I think corporatism, hyper-industrialization ruined the United States because people had to move away from the agri-centric culture to work for big corporatists who built railroads and factories.
Well, they couldn't be self-sufficient anymore.
Well, they could be, but they were lured by the opportunity to be well-fed and right. clothed and have security, right?
And you
in
know
exchange
what?
For a false security, we gave up independence.
Right.
I mean, we've all done it in some respect,
sure,
right?
Absolutely.
And no disrespect intended, but you have a city job and you have mm-hmm. security and mm-hmm. you have the lights on and you know what I mean? And sure. that's a good thing. There's nothing inherently wrong with it.
Right.
Unless you look at the bigger picture, and then we're all kind of screwed because we have to have cities that are really hives. It's just a beehive.
Mm-hmm.
You got worker bees. You got shitty bees. You got a queen bee.
Right.
You got drones.
Right.
You know, you got the enforcers, you guys. And it's just a hive. And the hive breaks down, and then we kind of fix it. But the hive takes a lot of maintenance.
Yeah.
A
lot of money.
A lot of maintenance. We read yesterday, 2 days ago, the 5 C's of the Arizona economy. Cattle, citrus, cotton, climate, and God help me, I can't remember the fifth one. But there's five.
There's five.
Copper.
Copper.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because the early visionaries that came to the valley that saw the ancient Indian civilization, was it the Hopi? The Hopi Indians. They could rebuild that and see that sense of this. And it was farming, right? Cattle, farming, agricultural production.
Yeah, you got a great climate for it.
And mining. Somebody found copper. And I think there's gold in them in our hills, too.
Yeah, probably.
But a pretty simple, straightforward existence.
Right.
Right?
Until we get all tangled up in government and world government and all the other stuff that comes with.
I've always said this, no matter where, what city I've lived in, I look at these big high-rise buildings. Who's in there? Who's in those buildings? What are they doing? Right? You know what I mean? These giant hive centers.
Well, you think about the cost of one of them.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And you're like, where is that money coming from?
And how did they pay it back? I struggle to pay back my house payment.
Well, now you can get an 8-9 year note on a $70,000 truck.
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
I know. So all I'm saying is I'm not advocating the destruction of cities.
Good God, no.
I'm saying cities are so complicated. I'll be honest. If I were given the opportunity to learn how to, I don't know how to farm. I don't know how to hunt. I can shoot really good, but I don't know how to hunt.
Yeah,
if I could learn how to do that and live on my own without hassle from my wife and be self-sustaining, I would definitely leap at that opportunity.
Well, I think there's a, you know, there's a lure to that, the lure of being self-sufficient. And
I also like communities, though. I mean,
sure.
If you had like 5 or 6 farmsteads together that sure. formed a little village that everybody
Are
helped.
Are you talking about a utopia?
No, I'm just talking about you brew beer, I'll make shoes, somebody will grow the food, and we'll all share.
Share.
Trade.
Trade.
Trade. I'm
trade.
Sorry.
Yeah, we got
I went
trade.
Democrat there for
yeah,
a minute.
Yeah, don't go Democrat on me, please. Please.
But you know what I'm saying? Doesn't that sound attractive?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I hunt down in southern Arizona and down along the border and stuff. It's beautiful, beautiful area. And a little town called Aravaca. And it's a cute little place. And out in the outskirts and out in the foothills surrounding Aravaca, there are bunches of little farms. Some people growing food for themselves. Some people sell it at farmers markets. You know, call them preppers. Call them whatever you want. But, you know, I drive through the area from time to time when I'm going from hunting area to hunting area. And to see some of the self-sufficiency that's there, I would imagine being away from the city, knowing that, you know, you've got, I don't know, canned goods or jarred goods, and, you know, you can shoot a deer from time to time or raise your cattle from time to time, knowing that, you know, if the economy blew up, that you'd be safe for a while. You know, there's that's got to be an incredible feeling. And, you know, I see the lure.
It's a podcast, so we can say this. You have to be able to have a little bit of, like, I don't give a fuck if they blow up the city because I got this.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know, I crack up. I think about that, and I'm like, you know, there's been movies about that kind of stuff, you know, and survive. I would imagine about 85-90% of people would probably starve to death within the first 2 to 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks.
You have to imagine that. Because, you know, the zombies are going to raid the stores.
Right.
They're going to hoard them. They're going to fight each other.
Yeah, because
you... But I'm saying in the first 72 hours, the stores and gas stations are gone. Oh, it's empty.
Right. 72 hours? Probably 7.2 hours.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no.
For the entire city to be drained of resources, let's call it 3 days.
Right.
Right. But circling the wagon back to that is, that's kind of weird. To my point, we live in a hive.
Mm-hmm.
If the hive breaks, we're all dead.
And it didn't have to be the whole hive breaking. It's one thing.
Right.
I mean, look at the toilet paper, for God's sakes.
Right. That was horrible.
That was.
I mean, I don't like broadleaf plants to begin with.
I don't. You know, burlap was horrible. That freaking 80 grit was just miserable.
Oh, you got away with 80 grit.
80 grit.
Yeah. I had to go way down to 40.
Yeah, I would carefully go to Dremel.
Anyway, we're drifting.
I know.
But it's fun to drift because we're at the end of the program.
Right, absolutely.
So to recap tonight's program, we have more dialed in about the government that has created more of a mystery than really answers, because we know what they are. We know where the money is pocketed.
Right.
I think we've uncovered that there's close to $100 billion coming back to the feds.
Yeah.
80 and 14 or something.
Well, what I can see on the paperwork is about $16 billion comes back from the feds. That's what I can account for. There was other sites saying something around $80 to $100 million coming back to Arizona. I have no idea where that's going. I would imagine there's probably federal stuff going on here that they may account that, because, yeah, maybe it's a federal program or a federal job, but it's right. Arizonans that are getting paid by those federal dollars. I don't know. I have no idea. But I will tell you, you know, because we're getting at the end, but I tell you, I think you talked about where do we start, and that guy on the corner or the beehive. You know, we go back to what we talked to at the inception of this, is that foundation of the family and the kids. You know, you got to teach them. Teach them about this stuff. Teach them about government. I mean, you know, your 8-year-old's not going to be able to sit here and go through an org chart. That's what I'm talking about. But what I'm talking about is you got to teach them about money. You got to teach them about true value, whether it's family or saving money or looking to the future. You know, loving your kids, reading to your kids, feeding your kids, giving the teachers a child that wants to learn. That is what I think is
ultimately, that's going to be the crux, foundation for the change.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it.
You know, I think
in the meantime, we're in a maelstrom of poop.
Yeah.
And we need to sort it out.
Yeah. And that's what we're here for.
No, you're right. Great notes to end on. That's Greg Rath. I'm Bruce Nixon. It's Countermeasures, and this is Anchor FM. You know, there's never really enough time to have great conversations, because one thing leads to another. Next week, let's try to dial back down inside, and I think we ought to do research. This is just a wild idea, but like, call a gas station. Let's go meet a guy that owns a gas station.
Right.
You collect all this money at the gas pump. Who do you send it to? And ask him directly, where do you send that money? Like, for me, I own a roastery and a cafe in the city of Phoenix. On behalf of the state of Arizona, I have to collect 8.6% sales tax on everything I produce that's not food. So, like, your cup of coffee, your frappuccino, your sandwich, anything I make, right? And then quarterly, I send that money to the tax board, basically the state. What they do with it after that, I don't know. But I'd be interested to know, does the gas station owner that collects millions of dollars quarterly in taxes on fuel, does he send it to the federal government? Does he send it to the state? Who knows? The state collect the money? Does it go? I mean,
I got a guy that I know pretty well over at a Chevron station that I've talked to a couple of times. Nice guy. I will this week see if I can pop
in. I think that's a great question, because if it goes back to the state, let's go find out who collects at the state and just ask them. Maybe we'll make a call during the week. Okay, you get all this money from gas station X. where do you send the money? Like, do you, like we've talked about, I've heard rumors, read papers that for every nickel in gas tax or for every dollar in gas tax we send to the feds, the state actually only received a nickel back. That's anecdotal at best. I'd like some more facts on that.
Sure.
Because doesn't that seem like, I mean, just as, not the whole show, just a part of like a starting point to follow this money.
Well, you know, we're talking about control. You're talking about slavery is what you're talking about, because you're kind of a slave to the federal government and the federal income tax and all the taxes that you pay.
I think that's a valid point.
What are you paying? 50% of everything that you make after all the surcharges and everything? 50%. 50%, 45%, 50%. Yeah. I mean, you know, imagine every time you took a $5 or a $10 bill out of your pocket and gave it to your kids, you had to cut it in half and send $5 somewhere else. I mean, that's how simple it really is. And think about how the economy would work, you know, if we were allowed to spend all of that money, you know, or at least a much bigger portion of that. Uncle Joe, he's going to raise that marginal tax rate up to, 39%? That's where he wants to go with it. I mean, you know, that's 40%. Now, that's the top tier. That's over 400 grand. But you know what?
Given Joe 40 cents on the dollar.
That's ridiculous. Well, but right. It's fair, though.
Well, that's because they arbitrated fair, which brings us to the top of the show.
Right.
Who arbitrates fair? God arbitrates fair.
Well, and if you can get God away from us, then you can justify.
Dude, that's already happened.
Well, no, that's
and that's next program. Damn it, where is God in the culture? Well, we don't think there is a God in the culture. The state, the federal government is godless. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Do we have another hour to start that conversation?
We could. I mean, we could. There's a ton of it.
No, I know. But for tonight, any final words of wisdom?
Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
I had to. I was sitting across from you.
You were my captured audience. All three of us.
Ooh. And the kitty in the corner.
Is there a kitty over there?
No. Do you even have a cat?
Good God, no. Are you out of your mind?
Clearly, I'm out of my mind.
Yeah, you're out of your mind. No kitty. Bad kitty.
All right. It's Countermeasures on Anchor FM. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a message through the website. Send us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we'll have another conversation of consequence, provided the Lord deigns it so.
Amen.
Goodbye.